Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Ron Giordano, and our guest today is Aaron Lytle, a local attorney here in Huntley and also offices in Elgin. Aaron has some really important things to talk about today, and we hope that you'll pay close attention because it's really very, very important to you and your health. Aaron, welcome to Around Town.
Oh, thank you, Ron. Pleasure to be here again.
So tell us about this practitioner order for life-sustaining treatment.
All right. This is, Ron, this is a form that's recently been published by the legislature. It's sometimes referred to as the POLST form, P-O-L-S-T, and that's just an acronym for Practitioner Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment Form. Really, this form is kind of the latest iteration of what many of your listeners may be familiar with, which is called a Do Not Resuscitate form. That was an old form that was typically on orange paper, and it was signed by the practitioner and the patient and gave, you know, some instructions with regard to CPR. This is yet another iteration of that form, but now it's called the POLST form.
And this form is not recommended for people, what, over 65, Aaron?
Well, I think typically this form is really intended to be for, it's not for healthy people, in my opinion, because if you already have a power of attorney for healthcare that's prepared, that you've done with your attorney, that agent under the healthcare power of attorney will have decision-making authority for those healthcare decisions if you can't make them for yourself. You know, with the healthcare power of attorney, as long as you're in charge and you have capacity, you can always make your own healthcare decisions. And then if you can't, you've named someone else. And they have the authority to step into your shoes. This form is really an additional form that a patient could fill out if they desired, but it's really intended for people that may have some sort of life-limiting medical conditions. So it could be very appropriate for someone that would be on hospice, and they would sit down with their practitioner. They don't sit down with their lawyer for this form. They sit down with their practitioner. And then there are certain things in the form that they have to make choices. But I think it's very important that any of your listeners realize that the choices that they make, once it's signed, it is a medical order. It's an order that could be followed by a nursing home, a hospital, and depending upon what they pick, you know, vis-a-vis what their own situation is, it's going to be followed. So it's a very important, very significant form that has, ramifications.
So before they sign, it's very, very important. They either have someone there that understands and reads it, or their medical power of attorney, but somebody there to support them.
Exactly. I think that it is not a form to be glossed over quickly. It's not a form that you just spend 5 minutes. And I think it really is a form that's going to be custom tailored to what your wishes are. And once you've compared that to what your situation is, you know, some of the items you have to pick is you have to pick whether you want to have CPR or not. You have to pick then what kind of treatment you want. You know, when that could be in the form, it's called full treatment, which would include things like intubation, selective treatment, which would not be intubation, and then comfort focused treatment. But once this is signed, it's going to be followed. And so it's really critically important that a in-depth, serious conversation is had with the practitioner.
And more than likely, you'd probably have these forms put in front of you, and there's multiple pieces of paper that are put in front of you that they want you to sign that I'm sure a lot of people just kind of brush through them because they're worried, they're concerned about their loved one. And I think that's when the problems occur.
Well, I think there could be the potential for problems. I've had a couple clients that have asked me about this form, and I asked them, you know, what was the context in which you were asked to sign this form? And in both situations, they were being admitted to a nursing home. And so the nursing home said, here are some forms that we need for intake, which is fine. But in here was this POLST form. And in both of the situations, I had already done the planning for my for those clients. I knew they held healthcare powers of attorney. I knew what their wishes were. And I said, I'm worried that if you And in both cases, they didn't sign it because they wanted to talk to me first. And I said, well, you know, I don't think, because in their situation, they were going to a nursing home, but their health was fine. You know, they were just going in there at the beginning stages where they were, it was like a stepped up place where they first had their own apartment. And then if their health
more like assisted living.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I said, I don't see that this is necessary for you. You each have named, you know, this is a husband and wife, you've each named each other as your agents under the healthcare poverty. You have full authority to act on behalf of the other one. And I'm worried that depending, if you sign this right now, it might have an impact on the flexibility that the spouse would have in doing things. And so I think what's important is, and is that if you are asked to sign one of these forms, it is a voluntary, it's something voluntary on behalf of the patient. It cannot be used, you know, they can't say, if you don't sign it, we can't admit you. That's not allowed under the law.
Do you think that some institutions may be forceful and say, all these forms have to be signed, that type of thing, and kind of put pressure on these people?
Well, I think you know, it could be. I don't want to speculate if it could be, but I do think what it does emphasize is that, you know, I know when I go to the doctor, they have a checklist, they have forms they want to be signed, and my concern would be is if you get a stack of forms, one form may be talking about insurance, one form may be talking about, you know, something else about releasing medical records, HIPAA authorization, those types of, those are standard. But if this is in here and the time isn't taken to explain what this does if you sign it, that's where I could see there could be some, I don't think that people realize the seriousness of this form if they sign it. And so it needs to be explained to them in significant detail.
So primarily it goes back to having your paperwork in order, having your ducks in a row prior to anything ever happening to you.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, what I would say is, you know, if you have someone and you have a healthcare power of attorney and you have someone that you know, and likely most of the time, those are people that you know your wishes, that know your philosophy, and they can step into your shoes. This form, I think, is really when someone is at a stage where, like I said, now they have life-limiting medical conditions. And in, like in a hospice situation, they may say this third one, comfort-focused treatment, you know, they want, you know, allow a natural death, but the primary goal is maximizing their comforts through symptom management. That could be, that seems like a wonderful case, you know, where this would be. But that person is saying, this is what I want, knowing this is my situation now. Doing it now before you need it, like I said, it could frustrate what your wishes are, and it could create issues for your agent if you can't act for yourself.
Well, so many items on that form that are listed there, would they actually go through and explain each one of those to you, or just give you the form to sign?
Well, I think any healthcare professional would say it's not, you know, the whole goal is to have a candid conversation with your healthcare practitioner. And this needs to go through, and they need to explain all these things. I don't think it's a 5-minute conversation. I think it's a longer conversation.
And I know you made a note about what it covers, just things like CPR and things like that. Do you want to go into that too, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, one of the items on the form is, do you want to have CPR or do you not want to have CPR? You know, that kind of goes back to, you know, kind of what we talked about originally, the do not resuscitate. But then the main part of the form says, you know, for situations where it does involve cardiac arrest, there's three choices. One's called full treatment. And your primary goal is attempting to prevent cardiac arrest by using all indicated treatments, which could be intubation, mechanical ventilation, and other treatments. The second one is selective treatment, where the primary goal is to treat medical conditions with limited medical measures, such as do not intubate or use invasive mechanical ventilation. And then there's some other items within that need to be discussed. And then the last one is really focused on the person that, you know, where they really want to just be comfortable in a situation where they know that, you know, their life is probably coming to an end, and they're going to put some verbiage in here about how they want to go down that path.
Aaron, would this form be also presented if you had hospice come in?
I think that any time that you are moving from like one place to another, I think the standard process is that this form would be raised. If you had an existing form, it would be reviewed. If you didn't have a form, especially in hospice, it would be a perfect opportunity to have that discussion.
And of course, you want to abide by the patient's wishes too, correct?
Well, that's why, like I said, this is not a form that's signed by with an attorney involved. This is between you and they call it healthcare practitioner, but which covers a lot of ground, but really with your doctor, so that you can, you know, because they know your situation best, you know your wishes best, and it's really marrying those two together in the situation that it's needed.
Then you go in the area of explaining how it's used.
Right. Well, I mean, it's really going to be used in that it is an order that will follow you around. So if you were in a nursing home or an assisted living and this was on file and something happened, this gives the staff guidance on how you want to be treated. You know, the first being the CPR. If you had said, I don't want to be resuscitated, well, then they're not going to try and resuscitate you. And then they have to, depending upon your situation, they have to follow these standards. But again, it's important to know, for healthy people and you have healthcare power of attorney, in my personal opinion, don't really feel that it's necessary. But for people that are, you know, coming to the end of their lives, I can see it being a form that would be utilized.
What are some of the cautions that people should be concerned about, Aaron?
Well, I think the one thing you need to realize is that if the patient signs this form, they can always revoke the form. Or if they have an agent under the power of attorney, the agent could also revoke this form. So if they change their mind or their situation changed, this can always be changed.
So how does that take place? How do you revoke your form? I mean, just...
Well, you could revoke it by putting an X through it saying, I hereby revoke this form on this date, sign your name, and then you'd hereby revoke it.
Okay.
Or you could fill out a new one. A new one in time would revoke the previous form. But I do think that it's important, again, that just, I mean, if anything comes out of this talk, anytime someone has a pulsed form in front of them, I think hopefully it'll just ring their bells that they really need to look at it carefully and make sure it's serving their best interest.
We're going to pause for a moment to remind everybody you're listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. Our guest today is Aaron Lytle, local attorney with an office in Huntley and also in Elgin. And we're talking about POST, a form that's a very important form to know about how it works and what it's meant to do for you. On those cautions, Aaron, is there much attention given to the discussion of POST when a form is being filled out or signed, or is it kind of just put in front of you and that's it?
Well, I think it depends. Like I said, my experience has been that with my clients, I was left with the impression that it was just kind of put in front of them and not really explained. I'm sure there are other situations where it's explained and it's done. It's been perfectly well explained and well received. But I do not feel, in my personal opinion, that this is a form that is, you have a 2-minute conversation about it and sign it. I think it needs to have a much more in-depth conversation with your doctor or your practitioner.
Can you give us some examples of situations where you were involved that became critical, that the folks came to you and were concerned about this form or other types of medical situations?
Well, I think that the one is that, I had a married couple come. They said that they were at their doctor, and they explained to their doctor that they were moving into this assisted living place. And the doctor said, well, you're going to need to sign these forms. And, you know, went on the computer, typed in, and some of the forms that came out were forms. One was a healthcare power of attorney. Well, they already had that. They didn't need a new health. And they were smart enough to say, no, we already have one. That's not an issue. The other one was this POST form. And in my situation with those clients, it was not explained to them because the questions weren't asked. And that's where I just have some concern that when you're in a hurry and you're trying to fill out forms, you know, sometimes you might get pressure to the explanation may not be that good, or there may be a rush to try and get things through. And that's where I think that, you know, you could have unintended consequences.
So if that situation occurs where they're being rushed like that, what steps can they take? Because perhaps it might be the husband's ill and the wife is concerned and she's rushing through it. Are there steps you could take or advice you can give her to say, wait a minute, before you sign those, do this first? Because at that moment in time, I'm sure they're panicked and they're nervous about their loved one.
Right.
What should they do? They're going to worry about, well, gee, if I don't sign these forms, I'm not going to take care of them. How should they go about that, Aaron?
Well, I would just say the first question that I think, if they have a power of attorney for health care in place for their spouse, if, you know, like most married couples, they'll have each have a power of attorney, they name each other. If that's in place, that agent steps into the shoes. So if they don't fill out this form, they still will have authority to act on behalf of that person. So they should not be felt that they have to sign this form because they already have authority. Now, if they don't have a healthcare power of attorney in place, then that's where the statute kicks in and says in what order people can make those healthcare decisions. And so generally it's, you know, it's still going to be spouse, but then it gets the order is a little bit different depending upon who's next. So as anything, if you don't feel comfortable signing something, or if you don't feel it's been explained to your satisfaction, then I would not sign it. You know, again, and if you have the power of attorney for healthcare for your spouse, you're going to be able to do anything on behalf of your spouse as long as it's a validly executed power of attorney.
And I would imagine folks that have the power of attorney, there's probably a period of time which you should go back and revisit that, because you might say, well, gee, I signed it 10 years ago, but things have changed. So
yeah, I think it should always be looked at every 2 to 3 years, or when there's, you know, something like this. This form is relatively new, and it's important, but it should be looked in, you know, this form should be discussed with the client. So the attorney should also discuss it with the client in relation to what they already have and see if it's a good thing that can be added to their documents or if it's something that's not necessary. But the patient will be the one that will make that decision.
So how recently did this form come into being, Aaron?
I believe this form came, it's within the last year and a half, I believe. I don't have the exact date.
That's pretty recent then.
Well, it is. And I think that, like I said, it's the whole DNR form. Oh, I take it back. The National Pulse form was 2019. I think the Illinois one was sometime after that. So I think that, you know, what it is just the continuation of forms that are being created, starting with the do not resuscitate form. And I don't want to leave any of your listeners thinking that this is not an important form or a good form. I just think it needs to be used correctly. And what I've seen so far, I just wanted to, you know, I don't want it to be rushed through. That's my main message today.
And I'm sure most people aren't even aware of this form, this Pulse form. It's so new. That's its first time that I know that we've heard about it, that it's something I'm sure many of our listeners are not aware of.
Well, and I think too, you know, I guess my question to you would be, or your listeners, if I had said this form's not called the Pulse form, but it's called the DNR form, a lot of people, I think, have some sort of frame of reference with regard to that form. It now has a different name. They may, you know, how anyone would know that it's tied together without having researched it, they probably don't know. But, you know, people have I think that when they talk about a DNR, they have strong feelings about whether they want one or not. But then the devil's in the details about what's in this form.
Have you had situations where perhaps the husband is deceased and it's just the wife and she's up in age, and perhaps she has someone that's maybe long distance, that's power of attorney. Can they pick somebody locally? Can they use an attorney for power of attorney?
So typically when I meet with clients, a lot of times, especially in this day and age, if someone's remote or out of the area for like your trustee or your financial power of attorney, that's not as big of a deal as maybe it once was. But I do think that someone that's local that's always someone good to have. Again, as long as they fit the bill, as long as they're going to do what you want them to do, But with any of the decisions, a financial decision doesn't have to be made quickly. But sometimes a power of attorney or decision under the power of attorney for healthcare has to be made rather quickly, whether it's organ donation, whether it's just to order a surgery or a test. Those things may need to be done quickly. And so that's why I generally like to have people that are local, that if there was an emergency and they get a call from the hospital, they can be there, you know, in a short amount of time, because there may be decisions that have to be made quickly. I don't necessarily like having someone that's in California be the first choice if there are other people that are closer by.
Well, especially if you have person all by themselves, where you need to have something done immediately, you have to have someone close by.
Yeah.
And I think that's good for our listeners to know, because I'm sure some folks are in that situation where they're alone.
Right.
And they need somebody close by if they don't have, you know, children or other relatives that they're aware of.
And for people that really don't have anyone, there are organizations out there that will act as a power of attorney for healthcare for people that really are just in a position where they don't have anyone.
And if that was the situation, how would they contact those organizations? How do they go about that, Aaron?
Well, I mean, I can get you a list of the ones that I know about, but I think typically those are organizations that, you know, you might contact Senior Services. If you have like I know Elgin has Senior Services, they would have a short list of those people, or any sort of, you know, maybe even an AARP or something like that might have something that was more locally based.
Could they also contact you or your office to get that information?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We could give them two or three organizations that we have had people use, that they've had good feedback. We don't make one recommendation for one. We'll let them do their own due diligence to make the decision that's best for them.
And this all goes back to having your ducks in a row, having your house in order with your paperwork for your wills, your trust, and things of this nature.
The more current you can stay on top of your documents, the less ambiguity there will be, you know, within reason once these documents need to be used.
And this is an area, too, that you specialize in. I know that you do a lot of wills and trusts, and you've got a lot of experience and background, even when it comes to the tax implications, too.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, this is what I do, you know, all day, every day. Sitting down with people, learning about them, their family, their wishes, what they want. And then my job is to get it down on paper so that what they want is what's going to be accomplished.
And at the same time, I'm sure you're recommending some of the areas that could be pitfalls that don't go that direction, because this could happen. And,
yeah,
you know, the government's quickly there to take, you know, your assets or take your money.
Well, right. If you're in a situation where you may have any sort of estate tax issue, there are strategies there to try and, you know, give you some savings there. But we also can talk about some of the income tax implications as well. And there could be some savings there as well.
And those rules are changing quite frequently, are they not, Aaron?
Well, the state tax is going, you know, the way that it is right now, unless it's changed, there will be a change in 2026. We have the privilege and pleasure of living in Illinois, okay, which has its own estate tax, one of the few states that does. So, you know, for certain people, that also has to be taken into consideration.
So these are things that you bring forward and say, okay, here's some of the things that you have to watch out for and to be cautious with.
Exactly. You just have to sit down and say, we need to get a whole picture of your situation. Now let me find out what you want to do. Let me look at here are some potential risks or some tax implications. Let's discuss those. How can we, you know, create a plan that will tick off all those items?
Have you had folks come in that have their paperwork all completed, but they said, gee, can you review this paperwork and see if it's in order? And you may find that there's a lot of things that are wrong with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll sit down with people, and there may be things that need updating, you know, because they may bring in a plan that was done 20 years ago. Well, the law's changed 20 years. You know, you can't expect the document that you did in 20 years ago to necessarily work exactly the same when you pass away, given that there have been changes in the law. And that's why I think if we check in with people and we talk to people regularly, it makes those, you know, then it's much easier to not fall into that situation.
So your recommendation is to take and review things probably every, what, 3 years?
Yeah, I would say every 3 years is good. Or if there's a big life change, you know, obviously if you have a spouse pass away or something like that, then that is a natural time to revisit that, just to see things are.
Are there any other tax surprises coming down the road?
Well, if I knew the answer to that, Ron, we'd be having a different subject to discuss today.
Okay. We want to thank Aaron Lytle for being here. He's with the law firm of Arianna Hardy and Ritt. They have a local office in Huntley and a local office in Elgin, and we want to thank him for being here today. Aaron, if folks want to contact you, what would be the number to reach you at?
Sure. Our main office is in South Elgin. That's 847-695-2400. Our Huntley office number is 847-669-5020.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
You've been listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio station. Go to huntleycommunityradio.com. Contact us for any information. In the meantime, everybody, have a great day, and thank you for listening.